It seems like every time you turn on the news, there's another story about racial bias in the justice system.
Yeah, it's a debate that never really goes away, and for good reason.
Yeah, and to really kind of get to the bottom of this, we need to go back in time and look at a case that still shapes these debates. McCleskey v. Kemp.
McCleskey, decided back in 1987, really gets to the heart of this. You have a ton of statistical evidence that seems to point to racial bias in death penalty cases. But the Supreme Court said, nope, not enough.
Right. I remember reading this case in law school, and it just felt like, how could they look at all that data and not see a problem?
Well, that's what makes McCleskey so fascinating. It forces us to confront the limitations of the law when we're talking about issues like systemic injustice.
Okay, so let's break this down. Before we get into the legal arguments, can we set the stage a bit? What were the facts of the case?
So we're looking at armed robbery and the murder of a police officer, a white police officer in Georgia.
Okay.
Warren McCleskey, a black man, was convicted and sentenced to death.
And McCleskey wasn't arguing that he was innocent, right?
Right. His legal team wasn't fighting the guilty verdict. Their argument was much bigger. They were saying the entire Georgia capital punishment system was racially biased,
Wow.
and that this bias had led to his death sentence.
So this wasn't about McCleskey as an individual, but about all capital cases in Georgia. How did it go to the Supreme Court?
Like most cases that get that high, it had to go through a lot of appeals. First, McCleskey's case went through the Georgia state court system, but every time his sentence was upheld.
Okay, so they hit a wall in the state courts. What next?
That's when they filed a federal habeas corpus petition.
Right.
It's basically asking a federal court to review whether a state trial violated someone's constitutional rights.
And that's where things get really interesting.
That's where it gets really
That's
interesting.
where the Baldus study comes in, right? I remember that name from Criminal Procedure, but I'd love a refresher.
Yeah.
What did the Baldus study find?
So the Baldus study was a massive research project. Professor David Baldus and his team analyzed something like over 2,000 murder cases in Georgia. They were looking for patterns in death penalty sentencing,
Okay.
what they found. Let's just say it sent shockwaves through the legal world.
Okay. I'm on the edge of my seat. What did they find?
They found very clear racial disparities in who was getting sentenced to death. It
Okay.
wasn't just about the race of the defendant, but also the race of the victim.
So even if the defendants were similar, if they'd killed a white victim.
They were more likely to get the death penalty.
Okay.
The study found that defendants convicted of killing white victims were four times more likely to get the death penalty.
Wow, four
Four
times.
times more likely
That's huge.
compared to those who killed black victims. And this is after controlling for other things, like how bad the crime was.
I can see why McCleskey's lawyers thought this would change everything.
Right.
How did the Supreme Court react to this? Did those numbers change their minds?
That's the big question. The Supreme Court admitted that the statistics were troubling, but they didn't agree that it automatically meant the Constitution was violated.
Really?
Yeah, they made a distinction between something called disparate impact and discriminatory purpose.
Okay, now we're getting into the weeds a bit. I
Yeah.
think these terms are important, so let's define them for our listeners. What's the difference?
All right. Imagine a company has a hiring policy that accidentally screens out a lot of women or minorities. Maybe there's a strength test that, while seeming neutral, keeps certain groups out. That's disparate impact.
Okay.
The policy might not be intentionally discriminatory, but the results are.
Gotcha. How is that different from discriminatory purpose?
Discriminatory purpose is more direct. It means that a law or policy was created to discriminate against a specific group. Think Jim Crow laws.
Right.
Those were made to separate and disadvantage black people.
Okay, so in McCleskey, the court was saying that statistical differences, like in the Baldus study, weren't enough
Right.
to prove that the 14th Amendment was violated. McCleskey needed to prove discriminatory purpose, not just different impact.
Exactly. And that's a much higher bar to clear. It's like trying to prove what someone is thinking, which is super hard when you're talking about something like implicit bias.
So even though the study showed a pattern of racial disparities, the court was saying McCleskey had to prove that the people in his case acted with discriminatory intent.
Yeah.
That seems almost impossible.
It's very difficult. That's why McCleskey is still so debated. Many legal experts and activists say this decision makes it almost impossible to challenge systemic racism.
It's like they're saying the system might be biased, but unless you can point to a specific person doing something wrong, we won't do anything about it.
That's a good summary. It brings up questions about how we deal with problems that are part of the system itself,
Right.
rather than just one person's fault.
Okay.
But there's more to the story. McCleskey's team made another argument based on the Eighth Amendment.
Right, the cruel and unusual punishment amendment. So they were saying that a racially biased death penalty system is cruel and unusual.
That was the argument, but that one didn't convince the court either.
Oh, okay.
To understand why, we have to look at how the court has understood the Eighth Amendment, especially when talking about the death penalty.
All right, let's do it. I'm ready to go deeper into that Eighth Amendment argument.
So the Eighth Amendment, right, it's all about making sure we don't have these crazy or horrible punishments. But when we're talking about the death penalty specifically, the court has said it's not always cruel and unusual.
Right, like there are rules around when it's okay and when it goes too far.
Yeah, exactly. And in McCleskey, they said that Georgia's system, even with those racial disparities, wasn't so messed up that it violated the Eighth Amendment.
Hold on. How could they say that? The Baldus study showed clear bias. How was that not messed up?
Well, their logic was because Georgia's system wasn't totally random, you know. The state had these things called aggravating factors that a jury had to think about before giving someone the death penalty.
Okay, so those are like things that make a murder even worse, right? Like if the victim was a kid or the murderer was really brutal.
Exactly. The court said these factors, plus the jury's ability to decide how much they matter, that's enough structure to keep it from being totally arbitrary. They weren't saying the racial stuff was good, but they said it wasn't enough to make the whole system unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment.
So even though the data showed the strong connection between race and who gets sentenced to death, the court felt like these aggravating factors and the jury's role, it kept things, I don't know, legal enough.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. It's almost like they were saying, as long as there's some kind of process, the Eighth Amendment is fine, even if the results are messed up.
That's hard to accept, especially when it's literally life or death we're talking about. It seems like they cared more about following the rules than about whether the results were actually fair.
That's a common criticism of McCleskey, for sure. People say it basically gave the okay to a system that can be racially biased as long as it follows the steps.
It's like saying the game might be rigged, but as long as everyone's playing by the rigged rules, it's cool.
That's a good way to think about it. It shows a tension in our legal system, right? This balancing act between following the rules and making sure things are fair.
And didn't the majority worry about what we call the floodgates argument?
Yeah, Justice Powell, he wrote the main opinion, and he was worried that if the court sided with McCleskey, it would lead to tons of death sentences being challenged.
Yeah.
He thought it would cause huge problems for the justice system.
So they were worried about what would happen practically if they ruled for McCleskey. Like they saw it as opening a can of worms.
Exactly. They thought that keeping the Georgia system as it was, even with its problems, was the safer choice. Didn't want to throw everything into chaos.
I get that, to a point. But it's hard not to feel like they chose stability over actual justice.
That's a debate people are still having today about McCleskey. Was it a necessary compromise to keep the legal system working, or did it sacrifice fairness for rules?
It's a tough question. No easy answers there.
Yeah.
But we've been talking about the majority's opinion. Weren't there some justices who disagreed? Did any of them agree with McCleskey?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Three justices, Brennan, Blackmun, and Stevens, they dissented. Their arguments are really important for understanding why people still talk about McCleskey.
Okay, so what did they disagree with? Why did they think the court got it wrong?
Well, first of all, they thought the court was way too focused on finding proof of intentional discrimination in McCleskey's specific case. They thought the Eighth Amendment should protect against the chance of unfair and discriminatory sentencing, even if you can't prove someone was being racist on purpose.
So they were looking at the whole system, saying the Baldus study should have been enough to raise red flags, no matter what the intent was.
Exactly. Justice Brennan, in his dissent, he wrote that the court was opaquing a system that allows racial bias to influence, if not determine, the outcome of criminal proceedings. Strong stuff.
Wow. So basically, they were saying the numbers are clear, the risk of racial bias is there, and we can't just ignore it because we can't read people's minds.
You got it. They thought the court made it practically impossible to challenge a biased system.
And they also weren't as worried about that floodgates thing, right?
Right. They knew that ruling for McCleskey could lead to lots of challenges. But they thought the court should care more about fairness and equal protection, even if it meant shaking things up a bit. They saw systemic bias as a much bigger problem than more lawsuits.
So they put justice above worrying about the system working smoothly. It shows how differently people can see the law and get different results.
It really does. It shows how a judge's personal beliefs and values can shape their decisions. In McCluskey, we see two very different ideas about what the court should do, what justice means, and how much weight to give statistical evidence of problems in the system.
It's like a preview of debates we're still having today about data and discrimination, the limits of legal precedent, and balancing individual rights with keeping society stable.
You're right on the money. McCluskey keeps coming up because it gets at those big questions about law, race, and justice in America. But it doesn't end with the Supreme Court's decision. There's a whole aftermath, a legacy that's still playing out.
Okay, you got me hooked. Let's get into what happened after McCluskey and how it's affected the fight for racial justice over the years. So we've talked about the opinions, the dissents, the logic, the moral stuff, but what about what actually happened because of McCluskey? How did things actually change?
Well, it kind of set a really high bar for proving racial bias in court. It basically said stats, even powerful ones like the Baldus study, aren't enough. You need proof that someone was intentionally discriminating.
So now you have to find that smoking gun, like you're saying.
Exactly. It's not enough to show a pattern anymore. You need to prove that someone in that case acted with bias on purpose.
So it makes it way harder. Instead of looking at the big picture, you have to find a tiny detail that proves discrimination.
Exactly. It's like trying to prove a casino is rigged by looking at one spin of the roulette wheel.
Yeah, you're probably not going to find it. So this must have discouraged lawyers from fighting racial bias.
It definitely made it tougher to deal with the bigger problems. They're forced to look for individual cases of bias, which are much harder to prove.
So McCluskey didn't completely stop the fight for racial justice in the courts, but it definitely made it a lot harder.
Yeah, think of it like they took a highway and made it a tiny winding road. You can still get there, but it's way harder.
Are there any cases where lawyers won despite McCluskey? Like where they proved racial bias?
There have been a few wins, but they're rare. One that comes to mind is Foster v. Chapman from 2016. The Supreme Court actually reversed a death sentence because they found racial bias in jury selection.
Oh, wow. So they actually found that smoking gun evidence?
Yep. The lawyers for Timothy Foster, a black man sentenced to death for killing a white woman, they found notes from the prosecution, and those notes showed that they were trying to keep black people off the jury. They even marked their names with a B.
That's crazy. Like they didn't even try to hide it.
Nope, it was blatant.
Yeah.
So the Supreme Court, which almost never does this, agreed it was discrimination and overturned the death sentence.
That's a big deal, especially with McCluskey being the rule. But it sounds like cases that clear-cut don't happen often.
Sadly, you're right. Foster was like a fluke. It doesn't change the fact that McCluskey made things much harder, but it does show it's possible to prove intent.
A small victory, at least.
Mm.
But we can't just focus on individual cases, right?
Yeah.
What about fixing the whole system that McCluskey showed us is broken?
That's a crucial point. It's bigger than just courts. It's about changing laws, policies, even people's minds.
So we need to reform laws, have activists push for change, and maybe even train people in the system about their biases.
That's the idea. And we've seen some progress. Some states change sentencing laws to give judges less freedom, which helps avoid bias. Others are tracking racial disparities in the justice system better.
Like we said before, you can't fix what you can't see, right? So showing these patterns is the first step.
Right. And there's this growing push to train people about implicit bias, judges, lawyers, cops, even jurors. Make them see how their unconscious thoughts about race could be affecting their decisions.
It's a start. If we can at least get people to see how their brains might work in biased ways, maybe we can reduce those biases.
Hopefully. It's about admitting that bias can happen even when people aren't tricked to be unfair. And it means we got to be careful, look at ourselves, and question our own assumptions.
It's something we should all do, forever, no matter what our job is.
I agree 100%. Fighting racial bias is everyone's job. It's about seeing how our history, our institutions, and our own minds can keep injustice going. And it's about making a world that's more fair for everyone.
Absolutely. Well, I think that wraps up our deep dive into McCluskey v. Kemp.
It's been a long one. We went from the specifics of this case to the bigger issues of how it affects the legal system and the fight for racial justice.
And I really hope our listeners learn something new about this decision, how complicated it is, and how it still affects us today.
It's a case that's still debated and inspires people to make change. And it shows us that getting justice is a long, hard fight.
So true. And to our listeners, thank you for sticking with us for this deep dive. We hope you found it helpful, interesting, and maybe even a little bit encouraging. See you next time.